Start broadcast, and we are on air, hopefully. Welcome, this is episode 6 of Loose Learners on Radio Edutalk. I'm John Johnson, and with me, Mariana Funes. Good evening, Mariana.
Good evening, John. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine, and we've just been sacrificing to the gods of the internet after our last non-episode, I guess, a couple of weeks ago when we broke up and failed. But this week, we're hoping everything's good. So, Mariana and I are both teachers. I'm a primary teacher. Mariana works in higher education. And we're both interested and do use the web to learn for ourselves and teach as well. So this show is about all stuff internet and education. And as usual, our question is the internet good or bad for education? And as usual, the answer is yes. We're here every first Wednesday of each month at 8 o'clock UK time. So the next episode will be on November the 1st. Today, and I'm going to mess up this, we do a bit of contemplative activism. Mariana, help me out.
I say contemplative, I don't know.
Oh, right, okay, you're probably right, because you're definitely right. Let's go with complaint.
Contemplative activism, yeah. and the term is not mine. It comes from somebody called David Levy, who wrote a book called Mindful Tech, looking really at contemplation and education. And he does a lot about contemplation, education, helping people how to use technology in an intentional way, I guess. And a lot of the work he does, he's gone to places like Google and various tech, large tech companies, is around helping people understand the value really of something other than doings and something other than speed. And the way that he sometimes writes about it is he calls himself a contemplative activist, because he says that there is such a shortage of people who understand the value of just stopping and just taking time and just really taking time to just stare into space and not have to be doing 20,000 things, that he says that in these days this has become it's a kind of activism. If this is not a contradiction in terms, he says, so he calls himself a contemplative activist. And I just love that, because I love things that make you stop and think, well, actually, but those two things can't go together, but they can.
Yeah.
If your society is such that contemplation is seen as a big deal and as something that really on the edge because nobody does it. Anyway, so that's that term.
So, and we're going to kind of dig into this a wee bit, and in particular, we're going to look at this site, the Still Web, that Mariana runs. But we sort of ended up the last episode that we got out. We were talking about Binky, which is, a fake social network app, which was very interesting from the point of view of learning about your responses to technology, responses to the constant flow of information, the endorphin spikes you get out of posting a tweet, etc.
I'm waiting for your likes and your likes and retweets in the new, relatively new feature that Twitter has with the live counters, where it looks like a fruit machine when all the counters go up.
I'm looking forward to having something that's likable enough to see that happen. Yeah.
I hasten to say, I have never seen it on any of mine. I've seen it on Trump and various other people like that.
Right. Okay, so if it's good enough for Donald, it's good enough for Edutalk. Anyway, we ended up talking about habit and the way we build up habits in using software.
The interesting thing about Binky, one of the things for me was how in trying to make a statement about you know, how we use social media, etc., because it was, you know, was written by this artist. And so the point of it really was this is a kind of artistic artifact, a kind of thing. In trying to do that, it's actually what it's done is it's taken out from a quote real situation all the gestures, all of the elements that make up the habits we have in relation to how we use social media. So the scrolling, the going left, going right, you know, is left bad or good, you know, all these things that we take for granted and we do automatically as a habit that really is often below awareness because our focus is often on the content, you know, who has liked my tweet, who's responded to it, etc. But in order to get to all those things, our hands are doing all sorts of things that is just automatic. And that's, I guess, what, you know, where the habit thing, we started to talk about that and decided that perhaps to talk a little bit about the still web and the idea of using the digital with greater awareness might be a significant and important thing to consider in the context of education. Because I guess we were asking that question, weren't we, towards the end of the last episode, which was, you know, do we want, you know, our children to kind of grow up in that kind of way where, you know, half of what they do on the computer, they are not really paying attention to, they're not aware of what they're doing. Like, kind of like this, the thing that we often do. I'm sure you never do this thing, but you know, when you're about to join something and they go for the terms and conditions, and you go, oh, just tick that so that you can get on.
Yeah, oh, never, nobody reads those. No. Click, click. I'm pretty sure there's some young people who don't actually realise what that means. They just know they've got to click agree twice, and they're away. They've never even thought terms of conditions. And part of that, I guess, is built into the software. That's one of the reasons terms and conditions are so long, I think, because so that people don't read them. I don't know if we talked about it before, that somebody translated various social network terms and conditions into language that a 12-year-old would understand. So it's doable, you know, you can do it. Basically, all your stuff belongs to us was the message behind most of them. You post it and we can then do what we like. But this sort of, well, I say, I don't know if it's mindless, but our habit, the idea of the still web, which is stillweb.org, which is a site you set up, is to go against this idea, yeah? I'm going to have a wee bit of talk about that today, and maybe you could just introduce it and explain it to people.
Well, it started with the idea of creating a digital monastery. That was the idea that I had. I wanted to see, would it be possible to create a website that would, in some sense, offer the kind of stopping, quiet, silent stillness that one can get from, say, physically going to a monastery or, you know, a retreat place. And how might one do that to counter this thing of, you know, the constant speed, the constant updating, the new, more, that often is the case in how we relate to the web these days, you know, that we collect so much stuff and more and new and you know, I'm sure again that not you, John, but I have to say that, you know, the amount of stuff that I've got in my pocket that I haven't read is quite embarrassing.
Yeah. we certainly like pack rats, I guess. We grab all this stuff and put it for this mythical later. when I'm going to have time to read, you know, through everything I've bookmarked. So how do we counteract that, I guess, is the thing. And just briefly before we go on to that, one of the reasons we're talking about this in EduTalk is that I can see a lot of parallels between the way people are, teachers especially, are getting interested in not only the well-being of their pupils, and here in Scotland, health and well-being is equal weight really with literacy and numeracy now in our curriculum, but in the well-being of themselves. And I guess there's an awful lot of parallels between the way we approach life in general now and we approach digital technology. I think this should be really interesting for folk who are maybe caught up in their work and racing towards who knows what.
Well, a lot of the habits and a lot of the patterns, really, they transfer, don't they? They just gives us one other medium in which to play out some of the psychological patterns that we have in life generally. So absolutely, I don't think it is something that is exclusive to technology. I do think that technology enables unhealthy habit. But that's a big question which we can talk about.
Can it also enable healthy habits, though?
Well, it can do, depending on people's awareness. I mean, this is what goes back to, you know, our awareness of how we use it, which often isn't the way that technology is often in the background, isn't it? We learn what we need to learn in order that we can send that email, we can, you know, create that table, write, you know, that website, communicate with that person, send that tweet. So you're not really paying attention to the means whereby, as the Alexander teachers talk about, you know, you always are paying attention to your end goal and learning how to do that process in a purposeful way, I think is non-trivial. Because everything around us encourages us not to, and I think technology particularly encourages us not to.
Maybe come back later to that idea, because I've just, I guess it feeds into software design and things. So the Still Web, you started it as a...
Yeah, so the idea was to try and see, you know, could one create a website that in a sense, you know, had that same sort of feel, so that you could, I called it a digital contemplation studio, so that, you know, the idea that you could visit it in the process of, you know, going through your day, working on a computer, whatever you do in your computer, you could make a point to maybe visit it for some quiet time, for some stillness, hence the idea of the Still Web. It's by no means finished, but the one thing that is most finished is the idea of the daily stillness, which is like small activities that people can do. Just as a sort of half an hour, 20 minutes, do something that will make you stop from the rushing around of your day. And so that was the idea, and ideas that I haven't had the resources to be able to do. You know, I wanted to create some kind of a space where you could do almost like a simulation, where you could go and do what you normally do online within social media, etc., so that it could then give you some feedback around, you know, how. How often do you check your Twitter? How often? How many tabs do you have open? How do you hide them so that nobody knows that you've got 40 in the same tab?
No. 4, because I just closed most of them down before I started broadcasting, is the answer there. So the daily stillness is produced every day. It gets tweeted out by... at lived time, with a hashtag, which allows people to respond if they like. And it might be worth just clicking the random button on that to just find out. So the Daily Still Web's at daily.stillweb.org, and it's a lovely wee site. And I've just clicked the button that says random, because there is one each day, but this one here is from August 27th, 2016, and it says, usefulness comes from what there is not. And you've got then a quote, which I'll not read out, but from Lao Tzu, a Chinese philosopher, and it suggests that the space in objects is useful, which is a different way of thinking of things. And I sometimes think that's a wee bit like artists talk maybe about negative space when they look at something. But the directions is find a quiet place and sketch other objects that illustrate ways in which usefulness comes from what is not there. Okay.
It's a kind of guide, isn't it, to look at the negative space and what it does, and it does affect our perception when you go photographing or doing or looking at that. It changes. It stops us really, because we have to look at the world differently.
Yeah.
So that's an example. Yeah.
There's a lot of these things. There's another one here. I've just clicked random again, which suggests you hide for 24 hours. Lots of apps on your phone, so that you every time you look at your phone, it brings you to yourself, I guess. Is the idea of that one?
There was one recently that Alan Levine found, because I mean people can submit, and a few of you are wonderful, Alan, and a number of people, kind of, because I can't keep this going on my own. I have to, you know, there are it's getting close to 700 or something now that I've done, so it's quite a lot. So different people always are sending me now, and it's lovely. But Alan sent one which I thought was so clever. A very simple thing, but it told people to get the change between having your phone be color and monochrome, and the difference that makes if you put everything monochrome.
Yep.
And that's amazing, because it creates you look at all your apps in a very different way.
I mean, that's one that I've tried. If I triple click the home button on my phone now, it goes grayscale. And if I triple click, it's an accessibility thing, I think, for people with particular visual problems. But it completely changes your phone, and it brings you up short. I think that's maybe one of the interesting things. You know, it doesn't look as attractive. So you can open your phone and it's grayscale, and that one, it reminds you to think about what you're doing. And the other thing, I guess, is that it just doesn't, you know, you're not going, oh, candy, you know, which is really, really nice. And the daily stillness, which I would suggest anybody listening that's interested about their relationship to technology in any way just follows on Twitter, because I find it really interesting. They come thick and fast, because you've got a new idea every day, but I find that just every so often there's something that piques my fancy, or, you know, I just think, oh right, that's really interesting. And sometimes there's really great articles linked, sometimes there's funny cartoons, and they've all got the opportunity to think about our relationship with technology. But I'm guessing it's quite hard for most of us to think in the way that you're trying to encourage, because I tend to think in almost in hyperlinks now. When I'm on the internet, you know, I think this idea and I think, oh, that reminds me of this, and I'll type something into the URL bar and hit that and search for something and look for something else and hit a link. And the suggestion always with these things is not to do that, I guess, or
I guess the suggestion is not to do it. I guess it's even before that, isn't it? It's more and more these days, I mean, because I do this work you know, the still web is how I, where I apply it to technology, but I do this work elsewhere. And more these days, I think that the one very tiny small thing that makes the biggest difference is to teach ourselves to pause on demand, kind of like you might pause, you know, your film, you know, and actually that if one can do that and one can teach, if you can teach yourself to do that, then I say you are able to manage a lot of the addictive qualities that, say, some apps have, and a lot of the things that, you know, that, that are making you rush around and work with unhealthy habits. But learning to pause where at those exactly the moment that you're describing, learning to pause at the moment where you go, I must go and find that URL, and actually embedding that habit that says, and I don't have to. I could do that later, and now I can first read the article, and then I'll go and, you know, so then you get a different state of mind, don't you? If you just read something and deep read something, then if you go and check and check and check and check, because then you get lost in all sorts of things, and you even forget your original article at times. There's a place for that, and sometimes we choose to do that, but I guess the issue is when we're not choosing. When you found yourself that actually your intention was to deep read this article A, and you found yourself 2 hours later reading article Z, that was nothing to do with what you actually went to do in the first place. That's where you're doing it and you're not choosing. It might be fun, you might enjoy it, but you have to be honest with yourself and go, actually, you know, this wasn't purposeful, conscious, or in any way choosing. I just let myself be led somewhere. And as I say, sometimes that's great. You know, you can set yourself up and just, like we often talk about that, don't we, you and I, when you say we just go down the rabbit hole and you go and find this and find that. And it's a wonderful thing. And we also need the ability to stay with one thing. And I think, and this going back to education, I see it with my students often. They have lost the capacity to do that.
So do you think it actually is a loss of capacity, or do you think it's just we're noticing that? Do you think people used to be better?
Yes, because we didn't have as much, it wasn't as easy. I mean, those of us like me who spend, okay, so I'm going to confess now to our million listeners. Those of us like me who used to hide themselves in the library when it was really difficult to go and find, you know, it's not a URL, right? You had to go find the book and learn how, and I would spend hours doing that so that by the end of the day, I mean, I would be doing exactly the same as what I do online now, which is, you know, the end of the day, there would be a desk and there would be endless books that I've been looking. So the process is the same. But it was much slower. And therefore, you would have to pick a book, find the thing, read the thing, find something. It gave you that space in between to think. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think now, because everything can be done so fast, we end up just looking, but not looking, finding, reading, and then absorbing, working with, interacting with, and then moving on. It's like it gets collapsed into the, and then I put it in pocket because I'm going to read it later.
Okay.
That sort of thing, I guess. That's the difference I see. It's easier now. Mm-hmm. And if we don't understand that there are other ways of learning, interacting with the world, interacting with the written word, if we don't learn that it is possible, to spend a whole day with a poem, why wouldn't you? Levels and levels of meaning would get, you know, get revealed to you the longer you do that. Or, you know, sit in front of a wonderful painting, like some people that do, some artists that do this kind of work. They have this sort of activities for their students. They say your first assignment is to go to a museum, pick a painting, and you have to sit there for 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Make notes.
Yeah.
it's a difficult assignment. The majority of students find it difficult.
I think I certainly find it easier to keep moving. You know what I mean? It's like, it's, I can't sit on the beach. I would go for a walk along the shore instead. You know, because I probably want that stimulus and even the movement. Cause if I'm going to get quiet, movement helps in that. You know, walking along helps, I think. If you said to me, sit on the beach for an hour, John, I'd be going crazy. But if you say, go for a walk along the beach, I'll come back in a couple of hours, having found, you know, a seagull skull and a couple of shells and a bit of interesting weed. So I don't know if that relates to technology or not. Or
well, there is that. There is that, isn't there? Because one of the understanding, for example, that often what happens when we are focused on, say that you are searching things on the web or reading something online or writing a document, we get lost in that process and we forget to breathe. You know, there is such a thing, and people call it, is it email apnea or something like this, where you know, people have been measured doing their email and they actually stop breathing.
Good grief.
And it's quite a difficult thing, because of course, you know, if you imagine when people are working in busy jobs, etc., so you know, the email is like constant, and there is, you know, it's, you'll never be, you will die and not be able to catch up with it, and so people get into that kind of mode where they have to, and literally there is this thing where they, that this phenomenon, this you know, it's an unhealthy thing, and people get sick because they actually don't breathe. Now, if you know that this is likely to happen and that the medium lends itself to that, then there are things you can do to put in place, you know, and I guess that's the aim of a lot of the daily stillness. I often have stuff that's about nature, stop, take a walk, that kind of thing, or, you know, go and find the color green, you know, do something that will actually get you back in your body. And that's what I mean when I say that, you know, the pause is so important, because if you train yourself to just stop halfway through activity, just the times when you think, I can't, I'm just too busy, I couldn't possibly stop, then you find that even if all you do is 1 minute, even if you just take a wee walk, not like your wee walks, but a tiny wee walk, and then come back, you'll be in a better shape to continue doing what you're doing. And it's understanding that. So it's educational at one level, which I kind of try and do with a lot of the blog post on the main Still website. Educational on the also the making the commitment that you're going to do at least one small thing. And then, you know, the practice, because if you know, it works if you work it, like the 12-step people say.
Well, it's a 365 steps a year site. And one of the things you do is you invite people if they want to respond, and they can respond on Twitter. And I'm quite interested in this because it follows a sort of educational pattern, you know, of responding to things online as a, what would you say? The narrating your work as a way of thinking about it. And I found that sometimes I'm feeling this isn't really something that I want to be as public as I do about other things online, if you know what I mean. And I've written things in response to it before and then just backspace them. You know, select all, delete, because if folk do look at these things, it really does make you think, and sometimes it makes you think and realise that, all right, I'm not really going to tell the world about this at the moment, and it's something just quiet, and it might feed in and build up eventually to some understanding. I certainly think that it wouldn't do anybody any harm to follow and read these things, even if they never joined in. If they never,
I tell you something. I, you know, when I started doing it, and you know, and I thought initially, well, I'll only do it for a little while. Then I was using it for one of my courses, so I thought, well, I'll just keep on going, and you know, use it for this and use it for that, and somehow, you know, it became a habit for me, because of course it helps me too. And and one of the things that I find, exactly what you say, which is people read it, they often try the things, and often they will say just what you said, but I don't really want to send anything, you know, through on Twitter or write anything publicly. They will email me and say, and I've had this a few times, and I really like that. It makes me kind of, it motivates me to do it. And they go, I hope you don't think, you know, that it's a bad thing, but I don't feel comfortable, you know, publishing anything or tweeting anything. I just want you to know how much I enjoy it and how much I'm learning, or how much, you know, and how, you know, it's a real part of my day now, because, you know, I always look at it, before I get involved in, you know, my day's work and so on. Some of my students who may sometimes continue to do it even after they finish the course with me, etc. And that I think there is an element of the kind of thing it is not the same as, say, when we might do a digital storytelling course or something else that lends itself that much more for open conversation. This is, I mean, by its very nature, it's much more of a reflective, contemplative thing, and it may not be something that you want to say anything about.
Yeah.
So I get it now. I know that as I say now, I just do it because, you know, it's I've got into the habit of doing it now.
Yeah. well, the one that I'm looking, this distraction-free iPhone idea. The guy who's suggesting that you're quoting is saying that, you know, his phone distracts him from his kids, it's distracted from my wife, it distracts me anytime, anywhere. And that's maybe not the sort of thing you want to stick out in public unless you're very confident about talking about that. You know, it's like, I ignore my children, I'm not really wanting to say that on on social media. I was in that position.
I suspect that it might be a little different. Let's say that I was doing, and you know, Alan has often said, you know, why don't I? You know, if I was doing an open course, kind of, you know, like we do with the digital storytelling or an open education course or something, it was all open. So I attached to the Still Web, if I run an open course, and we created, like, you know, a little community, a group of people that were interested in doing, you know, assignments and a more structured thing, I think that it might be different, because then you might feel you've got other people who are exploring this with you. But at the moment, because of the way that the Still Web is, it's a very, you know, you do it, and if you do tweet, it's kind of out to the world, because there isn't any container, really. And I think that makes a difference. Of course, it does.
That actually is the organisation of it, and the way it works sort of speaks to this idea of the things in software that are hidden from us. You know, the way that Twitter or Facebook or anything encourages you to post and post and post, and this idea of slowing down. And one of the things, I think this is related, that I've been doing recently is changing the way that I post some of the stuff that I do, and I'm doing less direct tweeting and more doing it through my blog, and it's not as easy. It doesn't auto complete at replies, it doesn't it's clunkier. And I've actually been finding that useful, because it's almost like using, I suppose, the grayscale on your phone or something like that. It just makes you slow down. And if it's worth posting, if it's worth going through the extra hassle, it's like a tweet or something is just like so throwaway. It's so easy to do. You don't have to give it any thought. You don't have to take that pause you've been talking about. If you put some obstacles in your way almost. And I'm not trying to put obstacles in my way in this case. I'm just trying to do things slightly differently. That it does make you think a wee bit. It still hasn't fixed my spelling, though, unfortunately.
I think that you've put your finger on something that is also very, very important and sometimes not encouraged, certainly not in social media, etc., which is, you know, a lot of what we assume these days is that things have to be easy, have to be made easy and quick and fast, and you know, and I should be able to have the immediate gratification. And a side effect of that is that we lose that sort of waiting space, because we have an expectation that everything is going to happen immediately. And what you're putting your finger on is actually when you put discomfort or unease or you know, things that are not clunky, as you say, I like that word, you know, clunkiness in your workflow. But if you choose to use it in that way, you can just take a deep breath, use it to pause. Most we use it to get impatient and annoyed at the thing not working fast enough, kind of like the queue that doesn't go, you know, as fast as we want to. And really, one could use that time in the queue simply to breathe and catch up with oneself. But instead, we use it to encourage the monkey mind to create mind chatter, annoying and frustrate us that bit more. Again, it's about having the understanding that you can do something else, and then be willing to go, oh, you know, I could go off on one now and start to whinge at the person that isn't going fast enough in the queue, or I could ignore everything and just breathe until it's my turn. But, you know, doing that takes discipline, I'd say. And the discomfort or the unease and so on can give you that space. And I guess what you're saying is you're finding the space.
Well, almost by accident. It sort of reinforces some of the things I think you're trying to teach. And I think somewhere else, I don't know where it is, that you said this about the idea of pausing, but stepping backwards almost. I don't know if it was somewhere I read, I think it maybe was in a Still Web, or you maybe just said it to me, that you should take a step backwards before you go on. And it's like you go through a door, instead of just bringing on through, you just take a pause and take half a step back and then, you know, move off your heel.
I know what you're remembering. It was one of the daily stillness, and it came from a little activity that we got given when I was on retreat, and that was the point of it, that actually rather than go through boundaries, you know, like a door rather than just walk through, that you would take the opportunity whenever you had to cross or go up a step or go through a door, that you would just take the opportunity to use it as it was intended to stop. So you can build in your space the idea of the pause. Yes, I remember. It's a long time, that one. But yes, I remember that one.
I obviously do too, although not exactly. But again, it could be instead of a button that says tweet, there's a button that says, you know, take a breath and then tweet. Or you get a dialogue up, are you sure you want to do this, or something like that. Maybe software could help us out in that way by giving us the opportunity to do that.
And of course, I am going. I'm stopping because my dog.
Whoops.
Anyway, that's Colin. Yeah. he has a view.
Yeah, I think Colin doesn't want us to contemplate too much. You know, a bit of immediacy in action with his bouncy toy or whatever. Yeah.
But of course, you know, taking time, stopping, all of these things, you have to want to do it, John. You know, and I'd say that there is so much that stops us from just taking time. And this other thing, I think I did put this article, existential reassurance. I did have this article on one of the Daily Stillness a little while ago, and I love this concept. I think it was a New York Times article, and it talked about business and this sense of we are always so busy and we have so much to do, and you know, a lot of our interactions and conversations are about that. And this article, which you know I thought was brilliant, talked about, you know, this guy is writing how saying how he feels utterly left out because he's never busy, he's the laziest person he knows, and actually he always has time to just stare into space for as long as he wants to, and you know, it goes on like this. And his big point in the article is that he thinks that most of us are spending our time saying how busy we are simply because we need existential reassurance. I love that.
Yeah, I'm sure that I very often fall into that just response that's automatic. How did your day go? Oh, it was really busy. It might have been, but that's probably the least important thing and maybe the least interesting thing about the day. I don't know. Do you think what phrase did you use to describe it? I think personally, I'm just trying to up my self importance a bit when I do that. You know, it's like, oh, I'm really busy. I've got so much to do, and everything's too fast.
The article referred to it as existential reassurance, which you know I thought was really lovely because it was like you know trying to reassure yourself that you're there. Oh, I'm really really busy, so I must exist. And my wish for most of us, and the reason why I guess I take the time with the still web and some of the other things I do, is really that you know we exist for so much more than being busy.
So just maybe we've talked about this daily.stillweb.org, which is this series of things. But if I just go to the stillweb.org, at the moment, the first thing I see is it says in praise of slow walking.
Yes, those are the blog posts that I have on the main. That's the main one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think is it one by who's written that one? Is that
Chap?
Yes.
I don't know if Jap's the right way to pronounce a Dutch name, but Jap.
Jap Bosman is his name. And he's like you. He kind of helps me with, because he believes in the work that, you know, that the Still Web does. And so he will write, he writes a blog post, but his English is not that great. So we started doing this thing and it works really nicely. So he writes things because he thinks, oh, this could be important or that could be important. And then he sends them to me and I edit them, you know, edit the things for him. And we've published a few on the main blog on the Still Web. Mm-hmm. And they're lovely, lovely things because Jab has got a very different, he comes from a very different perspective. I guess he's retired now. And so a lot of the things that we talk about as aspirational on, because you know, when you know, on the Still Web and so on, you know, he is already doing and has been doing for a long time. So he reads philosophers, for example, that I have never heard of that speak to this, because he's Dutch as well, so he has a different culture. And some of the blog posts I think are really lovely. That was one. I think he visited some place and he wrote this, and he's very thoughtful. I think they're very beautiful, some of the observations.
Well, this one in particular is in praise of slow walking, it's called, and if you click through, it's about a walk in Rassie, which is in Scotland. But it's written very quietly, I guess, with well-spaced out paragraphs, and it actually serves to slow you down a wee bit as you read it, I think. I guess it almost keeps you there, so it's nice for that. And I guess what you're trying to say is, I'm guessing a lot here, that this is the sort of thing we need to do more of, online and offline.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I guess what I see certainly when I've asked, you know, I mean, I'm always asking anybody who, you know, who wants to do this sort of blog posts that are kind of experiential, you know, like I might ask you when you say, you know, so you know, the clunkiness, for example, you could do a wee blog post on that, you know, that because I like what I like to offer people, and if I had more time and resources to be able to give the still web, I would make it into a more professional thing where people could write on, you know, experiences that say they do some of these things over time and they learn something and so on. Could they write? And I think that Jab kind of, some of the blog posts that he does are like that. And so it can be, oh, you know, I could read somebody else's experience in terms of what they have gained from introducing more stillness, more space, more of a pause in their lives. And what you gain is so important, it's so valuable to those of us who have been lucky enough to find it, that, you know, to be able to read like that blog post that you're referring to, I think it's a lovely thing. And as you say, if it's written in that spirit, there is something that comes through the words that then helps whoever is reading it access that state of mind. I believe that that's true.
So we're on Radio EduTalk, and that's got education in its name, and I guess you could say the still web is a general education for anybody. It's an educational resource. Anybody can learn about this or think about this or start to work about this. And I'm just thinking, I mean, you've taught this sort of thing on, you know, more formally, but perhaps it's something that we should be building into education generally. And it tends to be that when we talk to children about the internet, that we talk about, if we're doing a job well, I guess, or as well as we can, we talk about staying safe. We might talk about data, we might talk about copyright and a lot of stuff about just how to do things. And I wonder if you think this should be part of a curriculum.
Well, it is already in a lot of, certainly in the US, a number of my students, the students that where I do this more formally, I've been amazed by some of the things that schools are doing to, you know, to encourage contemplation space, and not necessarily that is denominational, so it's not necessarily a kind of religious education. It's just simply introducing the idea of a different way of thinking that is less driven and less about, you know, making an impact on in the world and just receiving something about what's there, you know. And you can't do that with noise. You have to do that in quiet. And there are some wonderful things that, you know, people are doing to create, even with very small children, to just create, you know, just more time, more space. But of course, you know, what this brings out for me, yes, I would say the short answer to the question, but what it brings out, of course, is, you know, from your work at school, the demands often that are made, even with young children, in terms of syllabus, what you have to cover, not cover, how often, how quickly, etc. So the extent to which one has the space to build this sort of more emergent way of being, you know, it requires a great deal of creativity on the part of the teachers, I think.
I was wondering more in particular, and I can't even think how to begin to talk to young children about it yet, but in relationship to technology in particular, because we are doing, or supposed to be doing, more and more digital stuff in teaching and learning. I just wonder if, say, we teach about the dangers of, you know, social media, for instance.
But that would be where you would, and there is a lot of things that one can do. But that's really about helping them understand really the sort of psychology of it all, and I would say, you know, attention training. so that people learn that I would put it under that heading if I wanted to put it more, outcome driven, just train people in attention and if they understand how attention works, for example, the whole notion about multitasking versus not and when it's suitable, not suitable. There is a whole, the psychology of attention, and actually we should be teaching that, because otherwise it just goes implicit, covert, and often what people pick up is the bad habits of attention rather than what it can be when you control it, and when you have the ability, that ability to pause that we were talking about earlier. And so yes, that would be the place I would start in terms of the teaching of it. And then of course the next thing, which I think we mentioned briefly at the beginning, is the what is the responsibility that people who build and sell apps and platforms to educational organizations, what is their responsibility to build into it that pause button rather than rather than the applause button that Medium has now. Really, people. That's embedded in the design that I think you were saying earlier.
Yeah, and we certainly don't consider that at all in the application sets that we give to young people.
And I think we should, and I think that is our, that's a big thing that one could do. I mean, there is this book which, it's on my list, one day I will read, which is, I think the title of it is something like Addiction by Design, which looks at this whole thing of, how software is built to build addictive and bad habits, to stop us from thinking about it all. And and I say from an educational perspective, I kind of think we do have a responsibility, which is where, I am less open, positive, and all of that when we talk about educational Twitter, because actually, depending on the age, depending on all of that, I wonder if that's something that we should be doing for educational purposes, given the way it's designed.
Yeah, you see some of the troubles that Twitter engenders, maybe. I don't think many people are using it with young children, other than teachers broadcasting. I think it's more likely they do that than actually get children involved. But even that, maybe we need to think about that a wee bit.
Well, we've gone over our... over our half hour again.
So that's because we weren't pausing and paying enough attention there, Maria. Is there anything we'd like to sort of round up on?
I suppose it's to say, part of my intention at some point will be to grow the Steel Web so that the, some of the questions that you're asking about how do we do this and how could, for example, I do have the idea of a practice bank is what I'm calling it, which is a version of Alan Levine's assignment bank. And what I hope to be able to do is to create a kind of open, educational resource where you'd have different categories of assignments, etc., so that if you were saying, I would want to go and do, some attention training with my class, here are some things that you could do. And over time, I hope I'm going to be able to build, that in that way so that it's more accessible for people. And I have the news I had yesterday before, I knew we were going to do this today, and I think it's good news, is that I have a client in Australia who is very keen on a lot of this work, and she wants to support it. And last I spoke with her, she said that what she wanted to do, she's got this exhibition coming up, and she said, depending on, you know, her art, depending on what sells and so on, that she wanted to, you know, to give some money towards the steel web. And I think that is just such a lot. So she said, I hope you won't be offended. And I said, actually, no, I wouldn't be offended at all. We'd have a pot of money to be able to, that I could ask people like yourself, like Alan, and so on, because we have so many ideas. Like, you know, we've had the ideas with you about creating the interactive contemplation spaces within the steel web, you know, and we could develop that in so many ways if we could have, you know, some pennies to do it and some resources. So that was the good news that I had before today. So maybe to say, watch this space, because we may have some pennies to make it grow.
Brilliant. And I think certainly it's been one of the more interesting offshoots of my digital life recently, in the last year or two, is just following it. And I would really strongly recommend people that are interested in sort of any aspect of using technology or keeping themselves healthy in some way to have a glance at it, to subscribe in some way to the daily stream, or just watch the Twitter thing. Because every so often it will pop up something that will give you a pause, which is always good. So will we hang up the broadcast now? We'll say goodnight. We should be back on the 1st of November for another episode of Loose Learners. So if you're listening live, goodnight. If you're not, we hope you listen next time. Cheers, folks.